coming up on today's program. Taking a bite out of nature. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is Why So Weekend. As always, thanks for listening to the program, whether you're doing that on 91.3 FM on Sunday mornings, listening online at wyso.org, or this program is now a podcast. You can download it and subscribe anywhere you get your podcast from. But again, thanks for tuning in. Coming up later in the program, a conversation with WYSO Major Gift Officer Sarah Woodhull. It'd be nice to meet her. Also, we've got Mike Frazier with an interview about safety inside the orange barrels. That's coming up also later in the program. But up first, let's take a bite out of nature with this story from WYSO's Shay Frank. Cox Arboretum in Dayton has been home to the Maimon Memorial Garden since 2008. It was paused during the pandemic, but this year has returned to nearly full scale. Now, almost an acre of the Five Rivers Metro Park on Springboro Pike is filled with an assortment of edible plants, fruits, and veggies that also add beauty to the landscape. Shay toured the site to learn more about its bountiful harvest and impact on the local sustainability effort.
Upon entering the main gates to the Maimon Memorial Garden, I cross under a wooden pergola wrapped in vibrant purple passion flowers. The garden circles around a brick sundial that allows me to tell time with my shadow. A gravel pathway branches out through low-lying bushes that fill the air with the rich scent of basil and floral varieties. Tendrils of passion fruit dangle from the plant's vines as I sit down within the pergola to chat about the edible plants inside the garden with Todd Strong. He serves as the horticulturist at Cox Arboretum.
Probably my favorites is where we're sitting right now with the passion flower. It is a native perennial fruit to this area. The vegetable gardens is where my passion is. You know, that's where we're actually producing food.
The rest of the garden is teeming with pollinators, buzzing between blooming flowers and branches of a variety of other edible plants, such as Malabar spinach, heatless habanero, and perennials like berries or pears and apples. Funding for the edible landscape garden comes from the passage of levies, the Cox Foundation, and community donors such as the Maimon family. Five Rivers Metro Parks also relies on community support to maintain the garden. That includes local schools and businesses, and a dedicated five-person team of volunteers called Garden Ambassadors.
It's watering, if it's weeding, if it's planting, those types of things, they help sustain and make this garden thrive throughout the year.
That's Allison Zimmerman. She's a volunteer coordinator with Metro Parks. Zimmerman says the garden underwent a hiatus during the pandemic, but it's once again thriving.
I feel like now we're probably back in a better place. We have garden volunteers that regularly come out during the weekdays. We have our gardening ambassadors that come back out a couple times throughout the day. We're always looking for more volunteers, though.
The tall plants in the center are our habaneros. It's very similar to what we just did.
A group of students from Miamisburg High School visit the park every Monday. They work together to plant, harvest, and tend to the public space.
Wait, I don't want to snip a plant. Hold on. I can't see.
Okay. No, I never want to pick the green.
I mean, that okra there, you guys planted that.
Katie Grant is an intervention specialist who works with the students who volunteer at the Arboretum. She says she has been involved with this program for 13 years and has seen many benefits for the kids.
One, it's a personal skill that you can use at your own home. You can, you know, have your own garden, but they think this will give them a better understanding of the entire, like, you know, food supply chain of how to make sure that they're taking care of things and looking for things that are safe and just general employment skills.
And the edible provisions they cultivate are destined to feed thousands of people in Montgomery, Greene, and Preble counties. That's thanks to a partnership between Metro Parks, the Food Bank, Inc., and Miami Valley Meals. The Maimon Memorial Garden has donated over 900 pounds of fresh produce to the two local nonprofits in the past year. Lee Lauren Truesdale is the Chief Development Officer for the Food Bank. She says 4.7 million of the 17 million pounds of food they distribute each year is fresh produce.
So having locally sourced fresh produce coming from a variety of sources really helps us distribute new and different items. And also, of course, it helps make sure that the fresh produce is as fresh as possible when it's going into the hands of those in our community.
Truesdale says the food bank is always looking for what they call culturally appropriate food to offer all of its guests a taste of home.
Food is such a connector, and so this also helps fill that void to make sure, again, that we have a wide variety of items available for individuals.
According to Strong, this partnership is a major part of the Metro Park's dedication to community and sustainability. And another part of that sustainability work includes finding natural ways to prevent pests and maximize crop production in small spaces.
I had a seasonal employee that was here earlier this year. She tracked the populations of ladybugs. And so we actually had that data where you can look and see when that population peaks. Well, if we can use that data and plant in accordance with when that population booms, those ladybugs are excellent pest control.
Strong and Zimmerman say as the garden grows, they hope more volunteers will be encouraged to help out and continue to serve the community by providing fresh, locally grown foods.
Attention to it. You know, I'd like to have more staffing for it. I'd like to get more funding for it. That's kind of just what my goal with all of this is.
For WYSO News, I'm Shay Frank.
Find more reporting from Shay Frank on our website at wyso.org. You're listening to WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for sharing your weekend with WYSO. And sharing the studio space with us this morning is Major Gift Officer Sarah Woodhall. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's my first time.
So we're kind of set. We call it the front office, and then we've got the radio station. So there's a split, but we're all pretty close here in the WYSO building. And tell us a little bit about your job, if you don't mind.
Of course. I'm the Major Gift Officer. I've actually been doing this for 20 years. I worked for two universities. And it's developing relationships with individuals or families who want to help WYSO in whatever way they can. And it's my job to try to figure out what that might be, what they're passionate about. And if I find out what they're passionate about and it matches something that we're doing at WYSO, you put two together and it's magic.
What do they like about the station? What drives that passion for them?
Well, it's all over the map. But, of course, for news right now, people want to get unbiased news, and they can get it here. And then music. People love music, but not everybody. That's why right now as a hybrid station, it really works. Some people like just news, and so at 11 o'clock, they go someplace else.
Yeah, that's right. And the music lovers can always tune in to Novaphonic FM.
That's right.
Now, and you mentioned that you've been steered in this direction for the last 20 years, not all of that with WYSO. You said two universities. Okay.
I was at the University of Dayton, and then I spent the most of my time at Wright State University doing the same work.
And what drew you to this work?
That's an interesting question. It's a bit of a long answer, but I will shorten it. I was in banking, and I really wanted to leave what I was doing. I was not a loan officer. I worked for treasury management, relationship building part of the bank. And UD called me and said, would you be interested in this position? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And so we had lunch, and they described the position, and it sounded just wonderful to me, and I really wanted to learn about it. I said, you're going to have to teach me how to fundraise. They said, that's easy. He said, you bring some of the discipline of being in sales that major gift officers don't necessarily understand, like cold calling and reports and quotas and all that non-interesting stuff. And I just fell in love with it. And to watch people get really excited about something and find out what they are passionate about, it's really fun. It's just fun. It's doing something that they love to do.
Yeah. And you're obviously, I think you enjoy being out in the community from what I've seen over the years. Are you a Dayton native? Tell me a little bit about where you're from. And
I'm from right here.
Okay.
Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, never got far from home.
Well, I did a lot of schools elsewhere.
Yeah.
So I did that. But yeah, I ended up here, and I thought I'd never live here, especially in my 20s.
Oh, sure. I think a lot of people go through that.
Yeah. So just a series of circumstances left me back here, and I got a job, and you know, one thing led to another, and I was doing different jobs. I was in manufacturing for a long time.
Okay.
So I've been all over the map as far as jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. So let's move a little bit away from work and talk about any personal interests you have. Can you tell me a little bit about your family?
Sure. I'm one of four children. Both of my parents are gone now, but we have a brother here in town, and I have a sister in Cincinnati and one who lives on the East Coast. And I'm married, and I have one child who's married and has two beautiful grandchildren. Oh. Of course, they're beautiful.
Sure.
Aren't all grandchildren beautiful?
Yeah.
And we have a dog. She's a miniature Portuguese water dog. She's been in here, and she was actually on one of the spots. She barked on cue when we had the cat and the dog war.
Oh, yeah.
That's Sarah right. And I did a little spot about cats and dogs, and at the end, I got Isabella to bark.
Yeah, Sarah Nilsson.
Sarah Nilsson, okay. No relation to me. And I am an avid gardener. I love to garden. It's quite the disease.
Nice. That was my actually next question. I know you're passionate about work, but gardening. Tell us a little bit more.
I love to garden, yeah. And I do have an extensive garden. It's mostly perennials, and I share my plants with anybody who wants them.
Okay. Put me on that list.
please, because it's time to start thinning again.
Okay.
I bought a little house by myself, and I said I would never garden all the way around the house again. And this house had like three taxus bushes, and I pulled those out, and I now have a garden all the way around the house. So
nice. But if they're perennials, you know, it's a little less work than the annuals every year. But do you all – well, okay, you see, she's got a shocked look, and how dare you say that. So they are – just scratch my words there. They are a lot of work. Are you a hands-on, and you know, down in the dirt
I am.
Gardener?
I am. Yeah. My husband and I come into the house, and he goes, ugh. head to foot there. But I love that. I love playing with my grandchildren. I love doing almost anything outside, like hikes and walks and just to be in nature. It's very healing for me, like it is for most of us. So I love to do that.
Anything that you'd like to tell our listeners, either about WISO or life philosophies, you know, anything you want to, you know, kind of share with our audience?
Well, it's interesting how I got to WISO, because I retired in April of 2019 from Wright State, and I had never not worked since my early 20s. And so I took some months off and just did whatever I wanted to do. I literally woke up one morning and I realized that I love what I do and I can make a difference in what I do. And what I was tired of was the hours that I had, because it was – Wright State was in a campaign. I had flew from New York to L.A. and covered Ohio. And so, you know, sometimes it was 60, 70-hour weeks, and that's what I was retiring from. So now that I work for part-time for WYSO, I can continue to do what I love and make a difference, I hope, for the station. And I think I am.
Well, we believe you are. So that message, hang on to your passions and maybe just make a few adjustments to keep it going.
Yes.
Well, and we're certainly glad you ended up with WISO to share and all the good things that are going on despite the challenges moving forward, and you're helping out with those challenges. So, Sarah Woodhull, Major Gift Officer with WISO, it's been great to talk to you and get to know a little bit more about you.
Yeah, it's been good to talk to you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Northern Kentucky artist Elijah Batson has performed with numerous regional and touring bands and has visited the WYSO studios many times over the years with those bands. This summer, Batson released their debut solo album, Wildebeest, and returned to WYSO for a live studio session on Kaleidoscope. We'll hear a bit of that music and some conversation with host Juliet Frumholtz.
I don't wanna go to heaven, I just want to go out on the porch, sit all evening with some friends, In the springtime when it's warm, could be a punk house, a farmhouse, or a quiet neighborhood. But when St. Peter comes calling, just tell him to join us on the porch. One, two.
Elijah, you've been here before, but always as a part of another group. And I've known you, you know, for a long time between Frontier Folk Nebraska and Cream Boy and Dustbin. What's it been like releasing something that is you, that's yours as a solo artist?
It's been a long time coming. It's been a long time in the works. A lot of these songs are like 5 years old or something like that. A lot of these were written kind of in the midst of a lot of the touring that I did with those bands. And there's a lot of songs on this record about that are kind of about touring and traveling and things like that. But it's been really cool. It's been vulnerable and anxiety inducing in a lot of ways to be the main lead singer and kind of one in charge for this project in particular. But it's been really creatively fulfilling in a lot of ways too. I played most of the instruments on the record, and I did all of the artwork, and I did a lot of the DIY stuff, the booking shows and sending emails and printing out the CD covers and cutting them out and like assembling all of them DIY style. So it's been a lot of work, and it's been in some ways pretty nerve-wracking, but at the same time it's been really cool to kind of see a project through that is mine and is kind of uniquely my voice in the way that some of those other bands, as much as I loved playing with them, weren't.
When you are the person that is doing all of the things, not just playing all of the instruments, but putting the CDs together and sending those emails and all of that, how do you kind of balance, like, yes, like you can do it all, it's all in your hands, but it's all in your hands and it could be very easy to get either too precious about it or get very overwhelmed at the process of it, you know, all falling on you. How do you kind of do that dance as an artist and as an artist who's, you know, trying to get their work out there?
With great difficulty. I think that in some ways, I don't know. I think in a lot of kind of more democratic band situations that I've been in, it's been like a blessing and a curse to have a lot of hands. Like it's in some ways it's a lot easier to get work done, but in some ways it's a lot harder. With this one, with it kind of falling squarely on my shoulders, it's like, well, if I want to write a song, to record an album, to put it out, to tour on it, I've got to be the one to do all of those things. So in for the last couple of years leading up to this, it's been in a lot of ways almost like a second full-time job to be responsible for every step of the process. Because it was just me, I knew that I was responsible for it, and I was able to, I guess, eventually get it done. And like I said, it's been a 5-year process. So it's been a slow and difficult process. But hopefully now that this one is out, I've already started recording follow-up projects and things like that. So hopefully now that I've gotten the ball rolling, it'll be a little bit easier to keep it going.
Fantastic.
And also, being in all of those bands and all of those situations, I can't go without mentioning, has been so valuable to learn so much about playing with other people and about touring and about living that lifestyle and making connections and friends like that. So I have to give all the credit in the world to all of those other folks I've played music with for teaching me so much.
Elijah Batson in conversation with WISO Music Director Juliet Frumholt. You can hear the full interview and studio session on our website or on the Nova Phonic app. Elijah Batson's new album, Wildebeest, is out now on Bandcamp and other platforms. And here's more music from Batson.
Just off the river, born flossing the teeth of the South and Midwest. I hit the road, it's been landing punches on me ever since. Purgatory, silent as a tomb. I've been staying up late most nights these days, just gawking at the moon. I got domino trails lined up and in place, 'cause these things can go either way.
I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WISO Weekend. Thanks for sharing your weekends with WISO. Up next, road construction safety has traditionally focused on drivers as they travel by work zones. But a new effort by researchers at the University of Dayton is working to improve safety inside the orange barrels. WISO's Mike Frazier spoke with Hui Jack Wong, professor at the Civil and Environment Engineering Department at the University of Dayton. His team is working on a system of advanced sensors to detect hazards before they hurt workers on the job site. We'll hear this, and then it's Bird Note on WISO Weekend.
We call it Integrated Acoustic and Vision Sensing System for Workplace Safety Early Warning. So our aim is to enhance a job site situation awareness of our workers and of also the site project managers. So the system can identify the location of potential hazards like slow-moving heavy equipment during the noisy and maybe the low visibility conditions, so that workers who may be close to that heavy equipment can be reminded and alarmed so that they can pay attention to the surrounding environment and avoid potential injuries.
So it's like an extra set of eyes and ears for the workers to keep them safe.
That's true. Yes, yes. This is a sensor array, so a vision means we have thermal cameras and also the visible light cameras. So at a good visibility condition, probably both cameras can be effective, but under the very low visibility condition, like during night shift, and also maybe fog and maybe the raining conditions, probably a thermal camera is more effective. If there's obstacle or some kind of object blot sight, so probably the microphone array that can triangulate the location of the potential hazards without seeing it, that will be kind of secondary. Or sometimes even can be the primary equipment for identifying the hazard.
Now, how will workers actually be protected with this array of sensors? How will they know if there's a problem?
We also know the location of each worker using the Bluetooth devices and the GPS referenced beacon. So we know where the workers are and we know where the hazards are, so we can compute a kind of high-risk map of the job site in real time. So if any worker that is in the high-risk zone, we just send a signal to them, like some kind of vibration, like your cell phone vibration, right? So or let's say we can attach it to the wearable sensors like smartwatch. So give the worker some haptic signal, or even some sound signal like earbuds, so they told basically watch out and be careful.
So they're wearing earbuds and they have vibration items on them to tell them that there is a hazard and that they need to do something to fix it.
I think for earbuds, probably the sound is good enough, like some alarm sound. But for the there could be some secondary, like your smartwatch or, let's say, some wearable equipment like a cell phone, so it can vibrate and tell the walker. Yes, two different ways.
Will this system help mitigate any issues regarding accidents caused by traffic?
Intrusion. You mean the outside intrusion, right? If a car runs into the work zone?
Yes.
Okay, yes, we do take this into consideration. Right now, our solution is to integrate some kind of, we call it a smart traffic cone or smart barrel. So we can add some calibrated cameras to, you know, measure the speed of the incoming vehicles and also direction of the incoming vehicles far away and in front of the work zone, so we know the incoming vehicles, what is the speed and distance of each one. So if any vehicle, the direction is problematic or the speed is so fast, then we will have some early warning.
Why is such a system important?
Safety is a major concern of workforce, right? So each year, those kind of injuries can cost a huge amount of, not only huge amount of money, but also give the negative impact to a lot of families. So it's a economical problem, also it's a societal problem. So if we can contribute to this field, improve the workforce safety, especially the work zone safety, I think we can. This is a very, very impactful thing for the good of the society, right? The research and for the common good, so, which is also the value of the universal data, right? Research for the common good.
This is Bird Note. I'm Joanne Ryan, a nature educator in Trinidad and Tobago. Day and night, I often hear the piercing cackles of southern lapwings right from my home. They are familiar sights in my neighborhood. In a shallow depression on a grassy cricket field are three olive-brown mottled eggs. A southern lapwing mother carefully covers the clutch before leaving to look for food. But this clutch of eggs needs more than just camouflage to evade predators like reptiles on the ground or hawks in the sky. If an unfamiliar creature approaches, the southern lapwing parent, usually the male, sounds his alarm. He then charges towards his opponent, wings open and head low, ready to peck with his sharp beak. If that doesn't work, the lapwing takes flight, where he becomes a feathered fighter jet, swooping at the intruder. And the lapwing has a secret weapon, sharp red bony spurs that stick out from the bird's wrists. My heart jumped the first time I had to duck to avoid a lapwing's flying attack. I thought I was a good distance away, but the bird thought otherwise. This is why humans can never get too close to a southern lapwing's nest. These ferocious defenders simply won't have it.
And that's a wrap for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 FM, WISO.org, and wherever you download and subscribe to your podcast, please do so. I'm Jerry Kenny. Lots more conversations and maybe some music next week as well. Please join us then.